99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, Birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Red Bird Nation. Rounding it out with the usual trio, Ben Hootie and Braden Fogerson. I'm Mikey Frenelli. Gentlemen, how are we on this fine Thursday evening, our second of the semester?
I mean, it's been nice. It's kind of getting back used to the whole feeling of, and you know, having stuff to do. You know, you and I doing TV this morning and me being able to have a fun sports segments for the moments that I didn't hear you laughing about what I was talking about. So that was a lot of fun today.
Well, there was a great story that we talked about on TV and sports that was a woman in Texas or California, I think California, who stole 65 Stanley Cup water bottles from a store and then was caught. And then they lined up all the Stanley Cups on the hood of a squad car for like a picture, which is, makes it even better. And I was actually proud because Braden, throughout his sports package today on, or sports segment on TV, was talking a lot about all these jokes about Stanley Cups and stuff like that. So then the last kicker of the show was that somebody stole 65 Stanley Cups. And I was like, I think the Blackhawks got a couple of years before they reached that number. But I just, it's that trend of calling these trendy water bottles the name of potentially the coolest trophy in sports. And I feel like someone's got to change. It's like when you're wearing the same shirt as your friend. Someone's got to change.
I mean, it's just these combining of sports cultures, and because usually girls kind of have these Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
So we got the Stanley Cup and the hockey Stanley Cup, and we have Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
Yeah, it's just it's bridging the gap. It's
exactly.
It's social media and sports, and it's bridging the gap.
I think Owala's becoming more popular. People are starting to get over the trend of Stanley Cups, and people are like trying to do different stuff. But well, I don't know. I just think it's dumb to have something that name that is already kind of an iconic name.
But an Owala's
that the big thing.
Owala's not called the Larry O'Brien water bottle. Like,
yeah,
it's just the Stanley Cup. Like, that's what's weird about it. Couldn't it be like a Stanley tumbler? Well, because I heard them talking about today. Stanley Cups is like, it's not an old brand. Like, everyone's grandpa has a Stanley Cup from like, you know, working in the mines with like a thermos on the top. Like, that's, I mean, it was a blue collar worker cup throughout, and then they got this new trend. They got trendy. Speaking of getting trendy, the NFL is at the top of minds for everybody right now. The most popular sport in America, and the divisional round was no surprise with some awesome games. Well, let's talk about who was right and who was wrong last week. Ben, claps all around. 4 for 4 on your picks last week with the Ravens, Chiefs, Lions, and Niners. Braden and I both had at least one or two wrong. Steve had one wrong. He'll join the show in the second segment. But Ben, first, tell us what was the secret, and did you have the script, or how'd that work?
No, I didn't have the script. I think it was pretty fairly easy slate to pick overall. I think the only real coin flip was the Chiefs and Bills. I mean, still doesn't mean the Packers didn't give the Niners a run for their money. Thought it was going to be a big upset there for a second. But just a really good weekend of football overall. Some really good games, really, other than the Ravens. But even that game was still close for a little bit before MVP Lamar Jackson just kind of took over. So,
yeah.
Excited for this weekend. I think we have the right four teams in the conference championships right now, and I think it's going to be some really good games.
I think the biggest smash burger over the weekend was the Ravens versus the Texans.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about Baltimore lining up for the AFC championship that really sets them apart?
To me, they just have a really well put together team. Lamar is amazing, and they have a really, really good defense. They have not the, you know, they've never needed like superstar wide receivers because, you know, that's not the brand of offense they need to play to be able to do well. Their offense does well by being able to have good blocks when they need to set up. And if they don't have good blocks, then Lamar can be able to charge out of the pocket and move around. He's very, very difficult to beat, and they're going to be going up against the Chiefs team this week that kind of works in a similar fashion where you can't rush Patrick Mahomes. And I think that if the Ravens defense that's been good and very impressive pretty much all year is going to beat the Chiefs, they're going to have to be able to cover and do well without blitzing. You might throw in a little bit of pressure. Patrick Queen, I'm sure if he's healthy, can do a little bit of that. But for the most part, you've got to be able to defend and put pressure on the receivers to make a play rather than put pressure on Mahomes to rush himself, because if you blitz Mahomes, it's not going to work quite as easy as blitzing, you know, some of the other quarterbacks that you face in the NFL.
Are we past the point of saying, you know, Mahomes is going to lose in the playoffs, at least before the big game? Like, are we done with the you can't bet against Mahomes thing? Because at this point, it really seems like through two games, he has really just turned it back on.
Yeah. I don't know how the AFC West is going to look next year. I mean, the Chiefs declined a lot this year, but the seeding and the strong performance they had early kind of got them back in the swing of things. You're going to have a Chargers team that might look better with a brand new coach, but I think the AFC will be considered running through teams like the Chiefs until we can get more proof than just a couple bad losses in a regular season, because the playoffs are what matters.
Yeah. These Chiefs teams are becoming like very familiar to like some of the Patriots teams from, I would say, more like 2010s.
Right.
Because there would be times where everyone's like, "Is the dynasty over? Are they cooked?" No, they're good. And once you get to the playoffs, you can't bet against them. It's something about Andy Reid, Pat Mahomes, and Chris Jones and Travis Kelce. Once they get to the playoffs, they turn it to a different level. I feel like this year was the out of all the years where. Kind of had some seasons where they've struggled a little bit, but the narrative was very much like this team might be starting to hit kind of a slump. You obviously you take it in the fact that they have the best quarterback in the world, but I just think it's funny how, you know what, they're right back in the same position they've been every single year with Pat Mahomes. And
they've only lost to two guys in the playoffs before, that combo. I mean, you're looking at the best ever in Tom Brady, who Mahomes is well on his way to creating an argument against him,
yeah.
And Joe Burrow, who has shown great flashes of brilliance, but ultimately has really had a start that has been plagued by injury. So those are the only two that have been able to beat Mahomes. And before we wrap the segment real quick, the person that's tried more than anyone and just simply can never find a way is Josh Allen and the Bills. Are we done calling this the Manning and Brady and more of like the Brady and Roethlisberger or something like that? Like, it's, you know, someone who's really good just never can get the best of them?
They're just really unlucky. I mean, that's Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
I bet Buffalo wishes they felt like Detroit right now and were able to get the monkey off their back, but... Yeah, I feel really bad for them because it's just the same way every time. And even if Tyler Bass hit that field goal, I still guarantee you Mahomes, what would he have had? 2 minutes left on the clock? Would have drove down the field and been able to hit a chip shot for the win. So, I don't know. I feel bad for Josh Allen and that team, especially because they're going to have some impending cap issues and a lot of players that have been around under the younger parts of Josh Allen's career are getting old, and some of them are going to start leaving. So it's going to be an interesting offseason in Buffalo for sure.
WZND, the pulse of Red Bird Nation, joined by the 45th sports director in WZND history, the faculty advisor of WZND. So from the 56th to the 45th, and I only know that because we literally looked at the list today. Steve, welcome to the show.
I was going to say, I'd expect nothing less than the current sports director to do his show prep, you know.
We were looking at the list today, and there was a great list.
Yeah.
Dating back to 1982.
Oh, there's some names on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's some really good names on there from back in the day, and yourself and Stodds, who's over at the Score now, who preceded me. So
sure.
And who knows? Who knows who can really take off in the near future?
There's a lot in there. Joe Brand, current Blackhawks radio studio host.
Kurt Pegler.
Legend in this area.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Steve, for some reason, we were talking earlier today about the engaging thing, and Mikey was telling me that was your voice.
The intro
to Bird's Eye View.
Yeah.
Do you know if you have like a list off the top of your head of times that you pop up on the radio here, or is that limit?
There's not anymore. That was done. We redid a bunch of stuff in a summer, and we just didn't have voices to do voice work. So, and then we just never changed.
That's a good
after
intro.
That, yeah, it was. I mean, it was fine. Yeah, I try to let you guys, do your jobs.
Yeah,
I got my hand in the cooking process, but you guys are the ones eating the meal, right? So, yeah.
Well,
but every once in a while, I'll hop in. You know, there's been a couple times. You just mentioned Leo.
Yeah.
A few years ago, Leo was probably a freshman or a sophomore, but we had nobody to do a game over spring break. Leo was the only one here, so Leo and I hopped on a baseball call over spring break. Yeah, that was nice. Yeah,
I've heard about that one actually. Did you get to call play by play, or were you providing stuff?
Oh, I put him in his place. He did color. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I gave him the seventh inning. You know, like
bathroom break.
Yeah, like a Cubs game. Yeah,
Mark Grody inning. Yeah. Another great ice.
There you go. Another
one. Yep. He's gonna ring. Steve, we're not here to talk about the Cubs and sports directing and anything like that. You have your Lions hat on, your sweatshirt on. The Lions have reached the NFC Championship. There was a great graphic over winter break that you and I have talked about where it said the last time the Lions were won their division, Jared Goff didn't exist, and this iteration of the NFC North didn't exist.
Yeah.
You didn't exist, correct?
I barely did the last time the Lions won a playoff game. I was born in 88. I believe that was 91.
Okay.
So, yeah, it had been a while. I actually enjoyed the two Madden screenshots from the years that the Lions last won their playoff game. That meme was probably my favorite one. Yeah.
What is it about this team, that a couple years in the making, that has gotten them to this point?
Well, I mean, really a year and a half in the making, because they started out 2022 pretty poorly.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like, what, 2-7 or something, and then won 8 of their last 9. To me, there's a few things going on. A lot of it is Jared Goff getting to play in a dome, who Jared Goff's always been a decent quarterback, not a cold weather quarterback. Mm-hmm. Don't have to be when you play in a dome. And the defense figuring out how to play football. And then the last two drafts, I mean, when you look at the amount of talent that's come through on the last two drafts, especially the last one, and I was critical of the Lions after the last draft. Mm-hmm. They had just signed David Montgomery. Why you drafting a running back in the first round, right? Sam Laporta, everything about Laporta said that he was a blocker. He wasn't going to catch passes in the NFL, and now he's in the Pro Bowl. So there were a lot of critics after the draft, but there obviously was a method to the madness.
I mean, there was a reason to think that about Laporta, too. I mean, like some of the stars of the league, like Kelce's the biggest superstar at the tight end. He's bad at blocking. He just does everything else well. So, like, some of that stuff, like, that was good analysis at the time. It's just sometimes, you know, the analysis isn't enough. Sometimes things just work out anyway.
And, you know, the Lions have had a really good offensive line for, I don't know, 5 years now. But it was always, you know, two of the five pieces were hurt at a time. And to some extent, they dealt with that in the middle of the season this year. That's kind of where they hit their rough spot. But last year toward the end, we saw that front five stay healthy for the final stretch, and they won 8 of those 9. And then this year, they're finally back and healthy when it matters most in the playoffs.
This team has really kind of become America's sweetheart, I guess, is the best way to put it. I think that started when they were on Hard Knocks 2 years ago, and I think that's when America really got to know Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
Dan Campbell seems like a real character. People can have what they want to say. I know I've always never been the most positive, but I will say he really seems to think about that city and that team and gets everyone to rally around him and his ideas.
I mean, he's the meme of a football coach,
right?
Talking about grit and guys bringing their lunch pail to the to the office every day and whatever.
Thermoses.
And I get it. Like, you know, you roll your eyes a little bit when you hear stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But it is working. Like, at some point, and, you know, it's not just Dan Campbell. That's a huge piece of that puzzle. But to be in a conference championship game, there's a lot of things that have to go right. He brought a great staff in as well. Hopefully, they can stick together. Both the Lions coordinators are being looked at as head coaching candidates around the league. So,
yeah, two spots left open.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think all the pieces coming together at once was, and the fact it happened so quickly is the most surprising. There are people who believed in Dan Campbell. I don't think anybody thought it was going to be this year or even last year when they were put in a position to potentially make the playoffs in week 17.
You attended that game in Lambeau.
I did.
Where it was ended up being Aaron Rodgers' final game as a Packer, at least for now, and the Lions kind of flipped the page. Obviously didn't make the playoffs because of a game earlier that day. I want to say thank you as a huge Bears fan for knocking him out of Green Bay.
Getting Aaron Rodgers out of the division.
First and foremost.
I don't know how much I personally had to do with that victory, but I will say I've been to two games at Lambeau. The Lions have won both of them. So that doesn't happen very often either. The Lions had a pretty rough streak of like 1-20 football in Wisconsin. So they've turned it around lately.
What about this 49ers team? I mean, they're not the Rams or the Bucks, but are they beatable for this Lions squad?
Yes. I mean, at this point in the season, anybody's beatable, right? Anything can happen when you get to Sunday. That said, I just watched the Packers almost beat this 49ers team. The 49ers have not looked good down the stretch. They weren't hot at the end of the year. The biggest weakness on the Lions is the secondary. It's really been that way because of injuries throughout the year. They finally got Gardner Johnson back here for the playoffs. And the front seven can't get pressure on the quarterback. They're finally healthy as well. You know, a lot of people talk about Aiden Hutchinson. Aleem McNeil was having a Pro Bowl caliber season at nose tackle and finally got healthy again for the playoffs, and they've started to get more pressure, particularly last week against Baker Mayfield. So the Lions have stopped the run all year. Now are they going to stop Christian McCaffrey? We'll see, I guess. But at some point in the game, Brock Purdy's going to have to throw. Yeah. And that's the part of the 49ers team that I don't think a lot of people are afraid of. I mean, we saw the guy throw, what, 5 picks in a single game earlier this year.
Yeah, on Christmas.
So you force the 49ers to do things that are outside of their comfort level. I think the Lions have a pretty good shot.
He also hasn't really done anything super crazy stat-wise. No. I mean, he's only done, you know, 2 seasons now, in the middle of his second season worth of playoff games anyway, but hasn't done anything that's like, wow, this kid's really got something. He certainly, you know, he won the, you know, he won that spot. He certainly earned it. But I mean, of the 4 quarterbacks, like, I think even Jared Goff has to definitely be better than him.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
And Jared Goff was thought of a couple of years ago as kind of someone similar to him, as like, you know, is he really all he's cracked up to be if he doesn't have a lot of really good players around him? I mean, I don't think that Goff has really, really developed, and it's still very early in Purdy's career. We haven't seen anything crazy about
him. I mean, when that trade happened, even Lions fans were like, okay, the reason we're getting the picks back from the Rams is because we're taking Goff and the salary cap that he took up on that team, right? And it was going to be a handful of years as a placeholder before the Lions could, you know, draft somebody to take the spot either last year or this year. But things change when you play well. So,
is he the man of the future? Yeah. Is the thought
at this point? Yes. Yeah. I mean, unless he falls off a cliff next year,
right?
There's no reason to think that Jared Goff's not the Lions' quarterback for the next decade, which will be the rest of his career, essentially.
Yeah, solid quarterback, and he's going up against in a matchup where he's the number one overall pick previously, and the guy he's playing against, Brock Purdy, was an MVP contender at the Mr. Irrelevant pick. But we talk about it a little bit, and maybe this is a chance to just kind of talk about the 49ers a little bit more. Braden, you kind of alluded to it. They've had a strange season. I mean, do you think if they would have plugged and played with Goff on that Niners team, would they have been better, per se?
Probably. I mean, I think that Goff really developed a lot better once he left L.A. Obviously, McVay is an amazing coach, and that's why he and, you know, the coach that the Lions are going up against this week are the two coaches that everyone's trying to find people that have him in their phone contacts and being like, okay, if you know this guy, you obviously must coach really well like him. I mean, everyone's trying to find those ideas of the new style of play, Belichick retiring, like the old guard is leaving with him leaving, with the Seahawks getting a new coach, with all that. And I think there's a new brand of football that people want to be able to play. In terms of having coaches that, I mean, that's just the situation. And so when you have someone that's been able to be developed by him, and then you turn him to a Lions team that had previously not made the playoffs in 30 years, you expect, well, he's not going to get any better. And, you know, somehow Dan Campbell was that guy, and he kind of turned things, you know, back on their head, and the team around him got better, and he got better being able to play with him. He got really comfortable. To be honest, like, TJ Hockenson, when he before he was traded away to Minnesota, he was kind of the entire reliance on the offense. And I feel like once they got rid of him and kind of were able to spread the football to the seven people named Reynolds on their team and stuff like that, they kind of got things back going by being able to, you know, being willing to take a risk because you know that, you know, what has been working hasn't been working enough to get you to a place like this.
And you know what's interesting about the comment you made about you know, coaches retiring, a new brand of football, a different ways to think about how to play the game. The Lions are going backwards. Dan Campbell's coaching philosophy is run the ball as much as you possibly can, go for it on fourth down as much as you possibly can, kick it as little as possible. I mean, he's playing, you know, 1950s NFL football, and it's working.
Bring your lunch pail.
Yeah, exactly. You can do that if you have an offensive line.
My favorite play of the season was when they were in Los Angeles, and it was 4th and 5. They went for it, and it was just a David Montgomery run, and he got picked up like 10 yards. What coach tells? Let's run on 4th and 5. He's one of the great characters of the NFL right now, and it's building up a great storyline.
That was big for the Lions too. I mean, yes, spoken like true Bears fans, but David Montgomery choosing to go play in Detroit ahead of the season was big, especially with Jahmyr Gibbs and that tandem they've been able to cultivate in the backfield. I think that is a huge part of why they're in the spot they are in.
I was surprised to see both of those moves happen. I mean, it happened pretty quick. I don't remember how long exactly before the draft, but it was within a couple weeks where they signed Montgomery and then you know, went into the draft and grabbed Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round. And man, what a tool he ended up being eventually. Yeah. I mean, everybody thought right out the gates it was going to be, you know, like crazy. But it took a little while for him to learn how to play in the offense. But now we're seeing his full potential, and he's a nice complement to David Montgomery. And I'll say one other thing about the Lions. They won a lot of close games, right? Mm-hmm. This team was really close to, you know, not even winning the division, being a wild card team. They had to, you know, score, what, 3 touchdowns in a minute and a half against the Bears in Detroit to beat them. And that game in L.A. against the Chargers that went to overtime, they had to win. The Saints came back on them after the Lions got up, you know, 24-0 or whatever it was. So there were a lot of close games that the Lions had to win to get to where they're at right now.
And some tough losses, some testy losses. It's not like they went 17-0 along the way. They really built it up and got into this season. Steve, we'll shift really quick in the last 2 minutes of the segment. You killed it in pick six this year. I tweeted about it today. What was the secret? What was going on?
Paying attention it helps. One thing that also helped me was that the guests were here, and they don't usually do very well. Shout out to our broadcast crew over at Redbird or CEFQ Arena right now, Mr. LeMaster and Kaysen over there. So anytime I can dunk on Joey LeMaster, I'll do it. you know, I've been doing the pick six for a long time. I'm usually not at the top. It happens every once in a while, but never. And the other thing was, I was picking the Lions a lot, and they kept winning. So
this is true.
You guys kept putting the Lions on the rundown every week, and I'm like, yeah, okay.
that's Ben's fault.
It was a weird year of games.
It was some weird games, and I always, for the last year or two, I've been picking the Bears every week in and week out. And then, of course, this year, I'm like, I'm done picking the Bears. And then down the stretch, they win a bunch of meaningless games.
Yep.
So that's just my luck, I guess. Steve, thanks for joining the show. What a year it's been for you.
Anytime,
recently,
brother.
Getting married and your team making it all the way to the NFC Championship.
Big weekend. We got Lions in the NFC Championship, Royal Rumble. I mean,
huge
weekend.
We didn't even have time to talk about the WWE. We'll have to get back and talk about that some other time.
There you go.
Thanks for joining us. One, two, three, WCND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Finelli, Braden Fulgerson, Ben Hootie joining you for the fourth and final segment. We're cutting it off at 6:25-ish today because we got a great basketball game over at CEFQ Arena. Like I said, the women's basketball team, 11-6 on the season. They host you and I. They're 7-1 at home this season, 4-3 in the conference. We're joined by Joey LeMaster and Kaysen Shingothi, who are live at the arena. They're calling the game tonight. There are Adam Amin and Stacey King on the scene. Boys, how's it over there?
It's looking great. There's some people starting to fill out here. Both teams warming up, waiting for that energy from the crowd. But besides that, we're ready for some great action.
Boys, what's going on? It's Ben. Once again, great team that this Redbird squad has. Any specific player that you're pointing out tonight?
Well, one player I'm excited for the Redbirds is Maya Wong. She's a very fun player to play. Like, my player comparison for her is LaMelo Ball. She's very ball dominant, makes really cool passes, and she averages 12.7 points per game and 4.1 assists per game. She's a very exciting player, and I hope she produces some highlights tonight.
What do we know about the Panthers and the Northern Iowa team? They obviously have put together a solid campaign, and will they be a challenge for the Redbirds tonight?
Well, you got to go ahead and look at the overall stats before looking at the MVC stats themselves. So looking at UNI overall, they are 5-10 on the year. So overall, the numbers are not that great, but they are actually pretty high in the MVC seedings. And at the end of the day, it matters where you finish in your conference, not outside of conference play, especially in the MVC.
And to bounce off that from Case, and Northern Iowa's out of conference games were crazy. Iowa, Iowa State, Syracuse, Creighton, those are all teams throughout the rankings in the top 25. And, like, winning the Missouri Valley Conference, that's quite some competition. So that's going to prepare them for a tough contest tonight against the Redbirds.
Tough loss on Sunday for the Birds, losing 86-79 to UIC. What do you think are some of the keys for the Redbirds to get back in the win column in conference? Well,
a team against Northern Iowa, they're not that good at shooting the three, where it's relatively one of the lowest in the women's division in NCAA. So if you can protect the paint and make them shoot from three, the Redbirds can have a successful night tonight.
Drake next week, or their next game, excuse me, after this one, that'll be on the 27th on Saturday. How important is it to beat their other Iowan rival today and then go beat Drake? Obviously, that's the team that cut a season short early for the Redbirds last year.
Well, you obviously want to go ahead and win this MVC game tonight, start gaining some ground back after losing the in-conference game last week, and then going into playing a pretty decent Drake team this year. It's going to be a really big game for the Redbirds tonight, and like LeMaster said, it's going to be really important to defend the paint, not let them drive to the basket and get under it where they can score and start getting some of their bigger defenders under there. They need to keep them beyond the arc and keep their blockers on the players that they need to keep their defense up on.
4-3 in conference right now. Not as good as they were last year, but still a really deep roster. Hopefully they can get a win tonight against Northern Iowa, but how do you think this team fares going forward as we're getting towards the end of conference play here?
Well, so you're looking at a team that's had a lot of turnover from last year. They lost a lot of seniors, and there's a lot of new faces, especially in the starting lineup this year. They've really gelled well together. I know they've performed better than I was anticipating them to perform. But overall, they really need to do a better job of shoring up their defense here as we go down the stretch and finish off conference play. Because before you know it, Arch Madness is going to be here. So they've really got to do a much better job down the stretch and really start piling up those wins. Because blinking, you'll miss it, and we're going to be at the end of February.
All right, real quick, the theme of the episode. Who do you got in the NFC Championship, 49ers or Lions? Both of you guys, lightning answers.
49ers. You guys are gaslighting yourself into liking the Lions.
Yeah, 49ers can't go against Robbie Gould's old team.
Well, I can't go against my boss, so I don't know what you guys are talking about. But good luck with that. Good luck with the call tonight, boys. In a couple minutes, we'll bump it over to you guys for some Redbird basketball. It's going to be you two joined by Ben Hootie staying in the studio tonight, do some studio work.
Thank you, Mikey.
Thank you, Mikey.
Welcome back to the studio. Now it's just Braden, myself, and Ben. Good to talk to the fellas over at the arena. I love doing that. We'll have a couple more times doing that this semester. We'll do the early Red Zone start and then get the live pregame from everybody over there. I always like to ask, I didn't this time, what the vibe looks like at the arena on a weeknight. So far, a pretty solid year for crowds for teams at Redbird Arena. Ben, you were at the men's game that they won on Tuesday. Yeah. Was it a decent turnout for that one?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It always depends, especially at CEFQ, kind of how well the crowd's into it. Because mm-hmm. then it feels like there's more people there if they're really into it. And that was a very rowdy crowd on Tuesday night for a really big win
big
for
victory.
The Redbirds. Yeah.
anything we can expect in the pregame that we're gonna be shocked by in your pregame report, or is it just gonna be pretty cut and dry?
Just me talking about myself and getting you guys set from CEFQ Arena with our two wonderful play-by-play and color announcers. So
I put you on the spot. Well, you'll do a newscast in post-game, and you'll have some personality then.
Well, I'm trying to think. I was looking ahead, and I was like, in other Illinois State action, I don't really know what's going on at Illinois State right now.
I don't know.
Now.
You're gonna have to.
It's raining outside. Yeah, but that's part of the weather forecast.
I guess just scour the internet and see who they're playing tomorrow or something.
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
We'll have to figure it out. But I'm looking forward to seeing the Ben Hootie personality on the studio host. We'll see if you got the Joe Brandon, the Mark Grody, the Zach Zaidman, Connor McKnight. This is how we'll end the show real quick. White Sox named a new guy.
I know, I saw that.
They named a new play-by-play voice, and it wasn't Braden Fogerson. I was so mad.
I don't know. I wasn't ready for you to say that.
No,
to be honest. We saw a little bit of it. We only saw like half a clip before you had to do something again. But we checked him out a little bit at TV10. He definitely has a voice for it. He gets really excited at the start of a broadcast. Like, he sounds pretty good.
I will say, though, it is funny because, like, in his, like, video that they put out, the White Sox, he's like, I'm really big on connecting with the fans. I call multiple sports. I'm a big foodie. And it's just kind of funny because it's kind of the reason Jason Benetti got fired.
Yeah, all fair enough.
Apparently the White Sox didn't like it. White Sox didn't like that he called multiple sports. They didn't like that he ate food on camera.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing?
Just the general having so many other commitments with ESPN and stuff like that. Like, John Schifrin's his name. He's taking over Benetti. He's 39 years old. He's had a great career in NBC News, ABC News, excuse me. We talked about that this morning. And then, of course, lots of ESPN announcing. He's the voice of Slam Ball on ESPN.
I saw that, too.
He was, at least before. People are mad that Connor McKnight, the radio studio host, did not get the role. McKnight was telling people to stop, and he's excited for John on Twitter. But people really thought he was in line for the role. So we'll have to see how John is, obviously.
I think the most important thing of it all for it to connect with White Sox fans is hopefully he kicks it off with Stone really well.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes that's what at least I think White Sox fans care the most about. If the two color and play-by-play can have a really good relationship, which Benetti did with Stone, as well as Hawk Harrelson did with Stone.
Yeah.
So hopefully this guy can hit it off. If not, I don't think Stone's got much more time left.
There's something to be said for bringing in an already established voice that the Cubs did with Boog.
Yeah.
Schifrin obviously was pretty well established, but not as well known. Jason Benetti was really not well known when he got the White Sox job and turned a couple years in the White Sox booth into arguably the most premier baseball announcer doing the game right now. So who knows what the White Sox will get from John Schifrin? Who knows how long he'll be doing it at the Cell? We talked about that last week. It could be a brand new stadium and a brand new White Sox team. They'll finally focus on the on-field product. Maybe next year. We'll see. We'll have to see what happens. And spoken like two true Cubs fans and a Cardinal fan. All right. Redbird basketball coming up here on WZND. Thanks for listening to The Red Zone. Stick it here for Case and Joey and Ben on Redbird Women's Basketball.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson with now drives inside. Going to find Mary Crofton for her first three of the day. And it's good.
Curry owned the league last year. Oh, and sure. Personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
Agreed, I'm good.